A shoe is just a shoe. Until somebody steps into it, then it has meaning. The rest of us just want a chance to touch that greatness. And we need you in these shoes, not so you have meaning in your life, but so that we have meaning in ours. Everyone at this table will be forgotten as soon as our time here is up. Except for you. You're gonna be remembered forever, because some things are eternal. You're Michael Jordan, and your story is gonna make us want to fly.
Three, two, one, record. All right, everybody, welcome in to the podcast. We're Matt and Bob. We're here to pod. You're listening to the Bob, the Sonny Vaccaro to my Phil Knight.
Why am I Sonny?
Oh, I just assumed, you know, based on running ability.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I can see you in the stunner shades with the leggings under the running shorts in the purple car. Okay. I'm the one over here with
Matt and Ben. They're back. It's the worldwide nostalgia tour. I'm excited to do a doubleheader for the ages at one point. Good Will Hunting right into Air. We're talking about Air, the new Ben Affleck movie about a shoe deal. What did you think?
Loved it.
Yeah.
Sound the hyperbole siren. I think this is the best movie I've seen so far this year. And I would put it as my favorite movie that I've seen in the last 2 years. And I know you're going to get all Top Gun poopy on me here, but I love this movie. I'm a sucker for a good sales movie, a good sales speech movie. I was just absolutely grinning from ear to ear watching this movie, and really am excited and celebrating kind of this 90s sports movie resurgence that we've had post King Richard and now into Air. And I just really love the way these movies make me feel. They're almost like a warm blanket. And I really don't have very many criticisms at all, and just enjoyed my hang with my two buddies, Matt and Ben. How about yourself?
Absolutely. It's great to have the band back together. I think me and you used to be on either side of the Leo versus Matt actor of our generation debate. That has since been trounced by Leonardo DiCaprio. But
big win
Ben
for
Affleck
me.
Coming. Yeah, yeah. But Ben Affleck, or Matt Damon, I should say, rounding back into form. I always like an Affleck-directed movie. I think every single one that he's made, I've enjoyed. So he's clearly good at it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, to your point, I mean, you're basically living the life of, if Any Given Sunday was about freight movable, you got sports, you got good speech, you got business deals. Now there's been some hang-wringing about whether or not we can enjoy a movie that pushes a Nike brand, which I think is kind of a bullshit critique. You know, people will bring up the sweatshops and this is just over-commercialization. And, you know, the movie's already streaming on Amazon. They had to broker a deal with Amazon to get it produced. And, you know, you do whatever you can to get the money, right, to make mm-hmm. these movies. I'd rather have the movie and maybe there's some glamour shots of a shoe in there. But at the same time, like I enjoyed Shoe Dog for the interesting history of it. Not like I'm gay for Nike. What I mean? It's just I don't really care. But like, let me read you this. Well, one of the big dissenting on Rotten Tomatoes, I found this. Nostalgia is the only reason I can think of to explain why old friends Ben and Matt reteamed for a movie that so artlessly sets out to make us love shoe company Nike for buttering up a college hoop star better than Adidas or Converse did. So, I mean, technically, yeah, it under those parameters, Nike outduels Adidas and Converse. Like, do we really care about courtroom drama? Like that, but or boardroom drama. But at the same time, you look at like Jerry Maguire and Moneyball, which about guys who were able to outmaneuver their business peers. Billy Bean as a A's general manager, and Jerry Maguire is this like kind of fictional sports agent. I mean, that on the surface, do we really care about how agents outmaneuver other agents or GM's use of
sabermetrics?
Yeah, but those are great movies and they're interesting and there's drama.
Yeah, I think that criticism it has some fair points. Clearly is written by somebody who does not align with Nike marketing and branding and probably has just preconceived feelings about Nike. And so obviously they're going to bake that into their perception about it. And it really is, you can look at it as a 2-hour commercial. And so like, if you have negative feelings about Nike going in, you're probably not going to like the movie, I guess. I think it's also missing some of the human element of the movie. And I think whether you're looking at Michael Jordan's mother, who again, just every time she steps up to the plate, hits a home run, but Viola Davis is one person who I think steals this movie. But you know, whether it's believing in the potential of your son and trying to find the way that they can best inspire the world. I think whether it's if you're a salesperson, and I've talked to on this phone right now coming from a sales office and talked to several different people who watched it over the weekend and were outright inspired, you know, just basically in the emotional element, the emotional sale and the ways you differentiate yourself and can, you know, make a human connection in route of trying to make a difference for your company and thus a difference for the world. And, you know, I think they revolutionized marketing, they revolutionized sports marketing. And I think whether there's themes in there, human themes about taking risks and being bold and collaborating. And, you know, I even when you bake in some of the messages from Shoe Dog that both of us have read the book, and I really love how they showed Phil Knight here and where his limitations are. He's terrible in that meeting. And he comes in and he's almost like Ron Burgundy. Like, I'm kind of a big deal. It's we're valued at about $1 million, but this was a very important meeting. He's like, he's the worst person in that whole boardroom at connecting with the Jordans. But you know, that's why he was able to delegate and trust the people around him. Mm-hmm. And that's in Shoe Dog. He gives a lot of credit to his supporting cast, and he wanted to name Nike Dimension 6. And they built that into some dialogue, you know?
I love that they kind of had the references to Shoe Dog in there, like Dimension 6, what a terrible name. That was like, it was really close call too.
Yeah, and like he talks about like, what's the Nike swoosh supposed to be? And you know, they kind of take some really cool little historical elements from the Shoe Dog book and sprinkle it into the dialogue, where I don't think it's like super forced. But I think there's a lot of human parts to these sports stories. And when it's done well, you see good reflection of humanity. And I think Moneyball did a really good job about it, where it's the value of a person and what's your value. And you know, I think to me, I connected with all of those things really well. Mm-hmm. And can look past some of the overarching or higher marketing angles that come along with a movie like this.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on quite a few things that I wanted to bring up as well, like the 2-hour runtime. I thought this was like, there's no fat on the bones here. I think it was trim, brisk, well-paced, almost effortlessly charming. The casting, like just so on point. You know, talk about Viola Davis. Jordan insisted on that and on her being cast as his mom. He had no other. I mean, that he was adamant about it. So they had to get her to make the movie. You get like cameos from Chris Tucker and Marlon Wayans. And then we get a Skarsgård in there. Gustav. I mean, how many Skarsgårds are there? But I mean, it wouldn't be
so
a Matt
many.
And Ben movie. Six. Wouldn't be a Matt and Ben reunion without a Skarsgård in there.
Yeah, I was actually hoping Skarsgård.
I wish they could have gotten
Dr. Lambeau.
Yeah, Professor Lambeau, old Gerald. He's too busy having sex with his students on Saturdays.
It can be mathematics can be very erotic.
It's Saturday, unless you want to have a drink for me.
Unless you quick, because you're on that, this was a question I was going to ask you, and I just want to ask it while it's relevant. But, you know, I think Matt Damon, and I said, you know, Matt Damon is incredible in this movie. I think, I love a great sales speech, and sales movies are ripe for these incredible speeches. You think, I'm not fucking leaving Wolf of Wall Street. You can think about Alec Baldwin in But you can think Alec Baldwin in Glengarry Glen Ross, and here we have, you know, Damon with the "a shoe's not a shoe until someone steps in it." And
who cares? Go home and fuck your wife.
Go. Well, he doesn't say that. He didn't say that to Jordan.
Andrew Papa said it.
Yeah, he said it to James Jordan there. You don't want the shoe? Go home. Fuck your wife. Hang out with your kids. I would have actually loved to see Alec Baldwin in that Nike boardroom.
Oh God, him delivering the Matt Damon speech would have been great. Just like a great tap in. No, but
fuck,
I mean,
you. That's my name, Jordan. You think you're somebody? You haven't hit a shot in the NBA. I drove a Rolls Royce to get here. It was purple.
It was a Porsche.
Well, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not
showed up in a limo that I paid for.
Yeah. Anyway, I digress. But so who was your favorite supporting cast? Because I think Damon kills it, but there's all these great little side. So you have Viola Davis as Jordan's mom. You have Bateman, the marketing manager, taking a shit. You had Chris Tucker as the slick talking guy who can get almost like Jerry Maguire. He can get in that living room and sell the parents. You have Affleck, who's taken a turn, a little character acting there as Phil Knight. Any of those particularly win the supporting role for you?
I'm going to go for the surprisingly massive now, Jay Moore. No, I'm just kidding. I can't believe how big that guy is.
Was he in makeup, or was that actually how fat he is?
I don't know. Actually,
I think
that's
he was in
point,
makeup. I think they just playing, well, they wanted him because he's got the whole sports agent thing going on. So I think they
The Jerry Maguire callback. Mm-hmm. Actually, I honestly didn't even think to look that up because I was like, oh my god, is that what he looks like? But I guess he could have been playing a real life guy, right?
He borrowed Fraser's suit from the Whale.
Hopefully didn't get as many puns as his speech, but I mean you got to give it to Bateman, right? I mean a lot of that's improv, you know, you hear him talk about it on you know, when Affleck came on Smartless, you know, he was just all praise for Bateman, just like made his job so easy. The scenes with him and Matt were like
really
probably
good.
The heart and soul of the movie, and it was like a Sorkin script. I mean, they really kept the pace up. Speaking of Sorkin, I mean, I really like Chris Messina as well. You might remember him from such shows as The Newsroom. Mm-hmm. He's also in Argo. I think that guy is like the total dickish representative.
Yeah, the slick
for
talking.
Jordan.
Yeah.
I thought he was great. But I mean, you got to give it to Bateman. I mean, just really does some heavy lifting there. I mean, basically co-star with Damon. Those two really tied the room together, as it were. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really hard for me. I would still take Viola Davis. Even I think she's a pretty easy pick as well. But it's hard for me to close my eyes and think about this movie without thinking about the scenes with her at the picnic
that's
table.
True.
Yeah, I think she is kind of the catalyst for a lot of the themes coming home at the end, and believing in her son, and I believe in my son, and he's going to give you these things. And I love how they set it up in the beginning with Tucker talking about how the mom runs the families here, and she definitely did run that family, and he doesn't even take the meeting without her. And I think she's was really strong. And there's all the articles about Jordan insisting Viola Davis play his mom, but I think
for good reason. I mean, obviously, you know, his mom's a powerful force in his life, and obviously he wanted someone that could carry the weight of her legacy. Mm-hmm. You know, someone that stood up to the three biggest brands in the world and said, look, we're gonna get a profit sharing, or you're not gonna represent my son. And then just completely changed the lives of all the current, you know, shoe deal athletes out there.
It really did change the branding of an athlete, and they continue to do that with Tiger Woods and the Williams sisters and on down the line. I mean, it really revolutionized marketing, and to revolutionize things, you have to take a risk. You have to take a gamble, and, you know, it's going against the grain of what people have done in the past. And so, you know, you have all the gambling metaphors with Sonny as well. You know, me and you were planning a trip to Vegas here, but I really liked kind of like, what does risk mean? And having kind of, he had to go into battle and talk to Phil Knight about just what the foundation and the history of the company was, and not losing sight of that because we've grown to such a point. And, you know, if you really actually want this basketball division to work, you got to take a risk here.
Yeah, I mean, it's all up over the wall. I mean, I don't remember the quotes on like the top 10 founding principles of Nike, but it's all like, you know, it's almost like what Notre Dame, like play like a
aggressive or play like a champion today. But yeah, there's all sort of, yeah, they have all the little snippets that are written on the walls.
Yeah,
the printout.
Let's say real quick, I mean, imagine if Jordan had taken what, like $250,000 straight up flat, and now he's made what, 500 million, or he's a billionaire because of that deal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, he owns the Charlotte Hornets, or a principal owner in the Charlotte Hornets. I mean, he's, you know, the level of wealth he was able to attain by getting the stake and putting his earning potential and tying that to how successful the shoes would be.
It was
a gamble that paid off for both.
Which would then, yeah, exactly. I mean, everyone made money, but that talks about like generational wealth, and like these athletes are, you know, are, it's like there's millionaire black athletes, but billionaire white owners. And that was kind of, and that was in the 80s. It was like a big deal of kind of breaking some of that up as well. But I have to push back a little bit on the fact that, because we knew that profit sharing had already been on the table when Nike was trying to poach Magic, right? I mean, if you watch the show Winning Time, mm-hmm. Nike, which was much smaller then, was trying to land the big fish, Magic Johnson. They couldn't offer the salary that Converse could. So they offered him the deal that Michael got. So that, like, the bones of the deal were in place.
Mm-hmm.
But so we do know that they were willing to,
they were open to
offer. Yeah, they were willing to offer sharing to Magic. While still building this smart, you know, basketball division up. So I don't think it was that revolutionary in that, in terms of,
it wasn't a discovery that was made by Michael Jordan's mother. That's something we can say. Yeah.
I would love to know the percentage. Was it 1% of sales? Mm-hmm. When she's like, look, there's going to be I want a profit sharing. And then it's like, well, give me a number. That's like never discussed. So,
yeah. I'm glad we didn't get into the have another half hour where we talk about the semantics of percentage points when it comes to the deal, but and the tiers that it may be involved with.
Yeah, no, Ben Affleck, Phil Knight's just like, make it happen. Well, because like at that point he's pot committed, and it's like, you know what? Yeah, just go for it. Because like once he's sold on it.
It was important for Matt Damon to let him feel like he came to that conclusion himself instead of making demands. So he's like, hey, deal's dead. Like that was a little bit of almost an emotional drowning tactic from Matt Damon as well. It's just how to deal with the senior decision maker.
No, it's smart. Cause like, you know, in terms of running parlance, it's like, you know, you're 25 miles into a marathon. You're like, I'm not, you know, we're not going to finish. And the you know, guy like Phil Knight's like, no, we got to get this over the finish line.
Yeah.
Whatever it takes. And he's just all fired up, you know, because he was kind of wringing his hands about $250,000. And then and then just all of a sudden it's like, whatever. Give him
future
million and millions. Let's do it.
And let's watch the video again. But it's I think also.
Yeah, that video was hilarious.
One thing I think is fun. This was just something I think about. When it comes to settings and time frames, the 80s is always just a really fun time to just parachute in and have it be the backdrop of a movie. The old computers and the fucking fashion and everything. I think like Wedding Singer and movies like that. But I was like, I love that this is in the 80s. That was just another thing I enjoyed as well. I almost wanted like a ski rivalry to start happening.
Gonna need a montage. Well, they actually do. They start off with a little we're in the 80s montage.
Yeah.
Look at all the stuff.
Yeah.
And,
the old green type on the computers and things like
that. Well, I just want to say that. So this time last year, Everything Everywhere All at Once had already been out for months, two months, right? Or maybe a month and a half. This was the first movie that you've already touched on this, that of the year that I was kind of wowed by and could see making some moves at the Oscars. I mean, I don't think it's going to win Best Picture because this year is stacked, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dune 2, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer. I mean, I think it's going to be a great year.
It would be hard. Some of those are much more ambitious projects that if they hit, I could see them having more staying power, and they'll also be coming out later.
Dune 2 might be my Maverick of this. I don't know. I really like the first one. I'm gonna pound the table
I know you did. But yeah, I mean, it is a very exciting slate this year, much more than last year, I would say. There's one thing I wanted to add. which is, and this is some of the eye rolling that I do have around it, is Michael Jordan. This is kind of the second wave of media marketing, trying to remind people of how awesome he was. It really feels like he's desperate to try to maintain the GOAT status. And I think I hated the ESPN documentary. I thought,
really,
you can't have an, like, I think documentaries need to be unbiased. You can't like be a core producer on a documentary about yourself and like tell an honest story. And he did a lot of work to base it. Basically was a 6-hour Nike commercial mixed with a how badass is Michael Jordan campaign. Yeah. And like even some of the times he tried to criticize himself, they were like, it was like how Michael Scott tried to talk about his weaknesses. And he was like, I care too much. I work too hard. He was like, yeah, I was this like crazy guy. And I like practiced all the time and like demanded a lot from my teammates. Like what a jerk I was. Right. And it's like, no, you know what that means. You know, that's going to endear your fan base to you more. And, you know,
I took that really, personally.
And he worked really hard to try to dispel the gambling rumors and the, you know, the pizza thing and the pizza conspiracy. And like, you know, he every like thing that is kind of questionable about Michael Jordan, he like worked really hard to get people on his side of the narrative with it. And he didn't want to ask a lot of questions about himself. And, you know, even with his dad and like the death of his dad. And I just think I think there's going to be more honest documentaries that come out later that aren't produced by Michael Jordan. But I just think I was kind of
save the last dance.
Last Dance. Save the Last Dance is a movie with what's her name from 10 Things I Hate About You. But Last Dance.
Oh,
but
right.
Yeah, and then they went by the end of it they were like stretching. I was not a big Last Dance guy. Julia Stiles.
That was a big deal. That was in the heart of the pandemic, people were fired up about that. It was definitely a big deal at the time. And I mean, you got to give it to the teams were definitely, I mean, my favorite part about that documentary was just like kind of the game footage and kind of like the thrill of the drama of the narrative of the playoffs. And, you know, when basketball, I thought was really fun to me personally. Yeah. The introspective interviews with Jordan, maybe not as insightful as we would want or as stripped down as maybe you're thinking.
We didn't learn anything new about Michael Jordan in 10 hours of documentary. Like I learned nothing new about him. It was just trying to reinforce. He was basically trying to get a younger generation engaged in his legacy. And this movie right now, Air, is doing the same thing. It's another new, fresh piece of media content that gets people engaged in the Michael Jordan's The Greatest Legacy. And there's a montage at the end showing all of the cool shit that he's done. And it's supposed to re-inspire because I think he'll never admit this, because the ego on the guy is what made him great, but it's also his ego. Is I think he feels like people are forgetting him.
Yeah, they're you know, no one's swinging on his balls anymore. So
yeah, I mean, the younger kids are watching Steph Curry. They're watching Bron. It's just like over time, just naturally.
The Charlotte Hornets suck.
Yeah. Naturally, like people's legacy fades to some degree, you know. And so I think he has the power and the influence to continue to pump out content that supports his message. So as a Pistons fan, I am super biased.
Are you team Isaiah?
Team Isaiah, baby. Yeah, but I did love this movie. I just hated the documentary. That's all.
I wonder,
this is a movie. It's not presenting to be you know, unbiased documentary.
Is he a producer on this at all, or
I know that he had to sign off on a lot of the rights. He might be a producer. I'm not sure.
I'm looking at the credits. He's not listed here. But I guess they obviously, in deference to him, probably consulted him. But I like this more as a Shoe Dog adaptation than as a
Michael Jordan thing.
Yeah, let's swandle the balls of Michael Jordan.
And that's what this is, and that's why I like it more.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. especially like not casting Michael. Because it'd be in just showing the guy in some nameless actor just like from the back and having it be about the parents and the process. And yeah,
I thought that
point
was a smart move.
Yeah, definitely. It was a really smart, you know, a choice that was made that really worked. And you can kind of see the brains behind it or the reason for doing it. Because no one could possibly, the stature of Michael Jordan, you'd almost have to like cast him and kind of Scorsese him.
Space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because no one else could really kind of hold up the weight of that expectation, right? And it would kind of take people out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, it also spoke to the fact that he was kind of second fiddle at the time. Like, yeah, he wanted a red Corvette or whatever that he would, you know, forget about pretty quickly. But yeah, his mom was the one like running the show. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I thought that was a cool choice by old.
But there is a moment where Sonny is talking about Jordan and why Jordan's the guy to go with and how cool he is and how relaxed he is. And he's a killer. And I've never seen this in another player before or after. And there's just a lot of Michael Jordan hype going on when they're going through the process of who do we choose on this board. And, you know, that's always like, oh, I'm sure Michael's very happy with this part of the script, but you know,
yeah,
that makes sense.
I mean, if you're in the conversation for greatest all time, it's hard to avoid clips of a person being great.
Yep.
Regardless of it.
Yeah. I'm just a fucking hater. That's what it is.
I was a little bummed to find out that Sonny Vaccaro wasn't as influential in bringing Jordan to Nike as this movie made it out to be, right? Like, you know, there's a little thing at the end where Jordan says if it wasn't for the Marlon Wayans character, he never would have been, you know, just like stuff like that where, you know, we got to give Damon a meaty role and who's the guy we can kind of think of. And yeah, I'm okay with that. This is not a documentary. I'm okay with some liberties in the sake of dramatic action and, you know, trimming of runtime and all that. But no, just a big fan. I mean, could you see Damon getting a nom here?
Maybe yeah, writing? Absolutely. I think the movie will be recognized for original screenplay, likely, potentially directing piece. But I definitely think Matt Damon's going to get some attention for his performance.
Considering the fact that Everything Everywhere, like you talked about, had this Herculean run 8 months out, or almost a year, it felt like, you know, I think there's a chance for these early released movies pre-summer, pre-award season to kind of still stick in the mind of people. Although this kind of came and went from theater so quick. I don't have the box office numbers, but it's already free to stream on Prime. It's not like a $20 rental early access. It's like it's right there. Yeah, I saw it in a theater. I had the place to myself in Santa Barbara, which I always appreciate. But at the same time, I'm kind of bummed out by it.
Not great for the industry.
Yeah. But, you know, everyone's seeing Guardians 3, you know, and whatever. But, yeah, no, I could, you know, if, you know, Argo was a player, I don't see any reason why we can't. Again, it's just going to be a tough slate of competition, right?
I think some recognition will be all this movie's probably going to get. And then it'll likely stand the test of time for people trying to play sales inspirational clips during sales meetings.
You already memorized.
Not talking about anybody in particular.
Sound the Sirens talking about our actual careers.
Hey.
One other movie before we sign off. I wanna bring you into the elevator here, Bob.
Let's get a little girl from Ipanema going.
Okay. Yeah, let's step into the elevator. Let's play the music. I wanna do an elevator pitch on Sisu. Okay. Have you seen a trailer for this at all?
No, nothing about it besides Life Aquatic of Steve Sisu.
When an ex-soldier who discovers gold in the Lapland wilderness tries to take the loot into the city, Nazi soldiers led by a brutal SS officer battle him. So yeah, here's my elevator pitch. This movie is like an extended universe of Inglourious Bastards. It's like if Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino produced The Road. This brutal old killer takes on an entire Nazi regime. It's a lot of fun. It's, you know, 90 minutes.
Wow.
I thought it was a good time. So I think it's coming up to streaming pretty soon.
Okay.
So maybe
give it a stream.
Yeah, we'll give it a stream. I think, early access rental there. It's still in theaters, or you can stream it for
$20. Did you see it in theaters?
Yeah.
Okay. And is it gory? Is it just kind of action packed, or what's gonna?
Yeah, it's like Robert Rodriguez gore, right? That's okay. Very squirty, like, blood,
cartoony.
Yeah, no, exactly. But yeah, okay. 90-minute slaughter fest loaded with despicable characters that you'll actually enjoy seeing. I mean, there's nothing more fun than seeing Nazis getting shredded to pieces. That's a tried and tested.
Gotta mess up those Nazis. Really hard to have sympathy in that space. So cool. Well, you sold me. As soon as we get to stream, I'll be ready to party.
Yeah, cool. All right, man. Well, good to chat with you about our old buddies, Matt and Ben. And
This was fun. And yeah, totally. We'll be back later in the week to talk about some other films we've been catching. But thank you guys for listening. Don't forget to wash your hands, stay safe. We'll see you down the road.
See you down the road.
Bye.
Here we go.